You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. Each week, the CEO Series takes you inside the minds and lives of some of Canada, and indeed the world's top leaders, to discuss strategy, leadership, and today's pressing business issues. And some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us, like Justin Trudeau, Mohamed Yunus, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Sir Richard Branson. This show provides a thin, well, perhaps not so thin slice, of the kind of thoughtful leaders leading some of today's most successful organizations. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Carolyn Dewar, a senior partner at McKinsey & Company and founder and global leader of McKinsey's CEO practice. She and two co-authors have a new book out, CEO Excellence, so it seems appropriate that the CEO Series sit down with her. Carolyn, tell us about your where did you grow up and what did your family do back in the day?
Sure. I'm Canadian originally, so I was extra excited to be able to be talking today. Grew up just outside Toronto, regular kind of suburban upbringing. Very much went to school in Oshawa, in GM, so it was interesting to grow up in a one-company town at the time and kind of understand that whole dynamic. And I think it really struck me early the influence that companies can have on the communities that they operate in and all the stakeholders.
Just curious, what did your family do? Were you from a more of a humble background?
Yeah, my parents both immigrated from the UK. My dad's Scottish. My mom's from London. Very much kind of worked their way up. My dad's an engineer by training, and my mom worked a lot with special needs kids. And so they are still in the town I grew up in, and my sister's the local dentist.
What did you do? Clearly, you're a leader today, Carolyn. What did you want to do when you were back in elementary high school? What did you think you're going to do?
It's a good question. It's hard to know. What did I think? Well, I guess growing up in sort of a bedroom community where everyone got on the GO train and went downtown every day, I had this mythical kind of vision of what that was. So I wasn't really sure what people did when they got to Toronto, but I knew that they went up in those big bank towers and drank coffee and wore suits. And I sort of had this mythology around what that world was. And so I knew I wanted to work downtown, whatever that meant.
So where did you end up studying it, and what university, what did you study at university?
I went over to the UK right after high school. And so I went to the University of St. Andrews, and I did a joint master's in economics and international relations. So a mix of kind of the quantitative side with econometrics, as well as international relations, where that program has a deep dive on terrorism, of all things. And so kind of really got into the dynamic of influence and what that looks like.
So how did you end up at McKinsey from doing a degree like that in the UK?
Right. So St. Andrews at the time was not a core school that we recruited from. My timing was a little off. Prince William and Kate joined the year after I graduated. So I missed the whole boon that St. Andrews had. And it was early days of the internet, so I'm going to make myself sound old, but I was looking online in some of these kind of career books and discovered this idea of management consulting, which seemed right up my alley because it was a lot like school, right? You got to work on projects, you got to learn about all kinds of different things and work as part of a team. And I wrote off a letter to our London office at the time, kind of off cycle, out of the normal recruiting. There was no consulting club at St. Andrews. And went and had some conversations and really enjoyed them.
When did you first think to yourself that maybe I'm a leader? Was it back in Whitby, or was it at St. Andrews or McKinsey? Or when did you start thinking I might be a leader?
Gosh, I was probably a little bit late to that party, right? I think I was just really curious and really excited to learn. So even why I came to McKinsey was this chance to constantly be learning new things and kind of being in the room where things were happening. And I think I kind of fell into the leadership part, if I'm totally honest. I think when you find something you love and you're really excited about it, you start kind of attracting other people who are interested in that too.
We're speaking with Carolyn Dewar, a senior partner at McKinsey & Company and the founder of their CEO practice. I'm Carl Moore, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Carolyn, you've co-authored a recently published book titled CEO Excellence, the Six Mindsets That Distinguish the Best Leaders from the Rest. What led you to do the research and write this book?
I think through a lot of our work, we have the privilege to talk to lots of different CEOs, and and realized what a unique and challenging role it is. And when we dug into the data and the research, it turns out there's a lot of books written about leadership wrong. And there's quite a lot of books written about specific CEOs, right? Autobiographies or biographies. But we hadn't yet seen someone who really had looked across the pattern recognition of CEOs broadly, and not only looked at the data, but really dug into their stories. And Carl, I know this is something you do a lot of as well. I think there's so much richness from the stories. So we had an opportunity to sit down and kind of really understand what is the role and what does it take to do it well.
How did you choose the CEOs to put in this book?
We started, you have to start somewhere, right? And so we started with the list of the Forbes 1000 CEOs and said, who has played one of those roles in this century? So it turns out there's about over 2000 people who've been the CEO of one of those companies. And then we put them through several filters. The first was a performance one. And so you had to have delivered excess TRS in the top two quintiles, right? So the top percents versus your industry peers. And we did that to normalize from the fact that, you know, tech companies have gone gangbusters, other companies are at a slower growth curve, but for your industry, you've outperformed. We also wanted to make sure you had been enrolled for long enough that you had to eat your own cooking, if you will, right? And so you had to have been enrolled for at least 6 years. And then we applied some other filters just around reputation and other stakeholder impact to make sure that it felt good in the current expectation and construct for CEOs. And we ended up with about 200. And of those 200 CEOs, we had the privilege of sitting down one-on-one with 67. And some of them are private companies, some are publicly held, some are family-owned, some are founder business. But we tried to make sure we didn't have too many founder CEOs, because they just have degrees of freedom that others don't.
Use a striking analogy to explain what it's like to be a CEO. Can you share that analogy with us?
Is this the one about being a decathlete, or which one did you have in mind?
Sailing. I was reading one of the McKinsey article that interviewed you. Sailing.
Absolutely. So one of the first questions we asked all the CEOs was to understand, what is the job anyway, right? And everyone likes to simplify, so we were trying to get it down to just a couple of things. It turns out there's an irreducible core of six elements of the job. And as much as we wanted to simplify, the CEOs looked at it and they're like, no, it really is all those six. And the sailing analogy is that, you know, as the captain of a ship, or if you're sailing, you need to be doing multiple things at once, right? You need to be trimming the sail, you need to be navigating, you need to be looking out at the weather on the horizon, you need to be managing your crew. In the same way, CEOs have kind of six things they have to do at once. And sure, over time, your relative emphasis shifts, but you can't let any of them drop. And it's those six pieces of setting direction, organizing the team, getting the organization broadly working well, managing your board, your stakeholders, and yourself, right? You're constantly integrating across all of those.
We're speaking with Carolyn Dewar, a senior partner at McKinsey & Company and the founder of their CEO practice. I'm Carl Moore, and you're listening to the CEO Series. You mentioned in one interview that a number of the CEOs did not grow up in lives of privilege, and you and I are probably not dissimilar in that sense. That seems to be adding social class to the EDI discussion.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we looked at CEOs broadly, we were mindful of diversity and inclusion, even as we thought about the profiles and role, and we wanted to make sure we had a mix across countries and industry, gender and ethnicity. But we also were hoping to debunk some of the myths that you had to come from a certain mold to ever be able to be CEO. And I think that proved out as well, that there's a real mix of people, right? So for some folks, sure, they were born into certain privilege and they've been able to kind of ascend into those roles. And frankly, they have their own challenge in doing that too. But more than not, there was many, many CEOs who worked their way up, right? One from a bank teller all the way to the CEO of a bank. And they bring just a different sort of hunger, humility, awareness of the role. And so anyone can be a CEO in a way.
It's interesting that there's a sporting analogy. They go from college ball to the NBA, the game speeds up. And they go, it's so different. How different is the role of the CEO as opposed to other people in the C-suite that are not CEO in your experience?
It is much more different than anyone expects, right? I think 50% of the CEOs we talked to said the job was not what they thought it was. And all of them had had a huge job beforehand, right? Whether it was the COO, the head of a function, head of a big P&L. I think Bill George of Medtronic put it well. He said, nothing really prepares you for the role, right? You think you've had a big job, but you've really been a COO of a business. There's this whole two layers that are different for CEO. There's the whole external piece of truly engaging the board, truly facing off against all the external stakeholders and being the face of the company. That whole external angle is very different. And then I think the other angle is just your job is not to operate the business well. It's to lift up even above that and making sure that you're managing the conflicts and paradox, right? Of short-term versus long-term. How do you think about that? Shareholder returns versus multi-stakeholder returns. You know, being respectful of the past and conscious of change versus a really bold vision. Right? There's all of these lenses.
It strikes me boards are smaller. They're less of an old boys club. They're not your friends or golfing buddies, that you bring on people with substantive experience that can push back and give you advice and challenge you in a helpful way. Is that the role of the board you've seen evolve over the last 10, 20 years?
I think that's certainly the dream, right? And I think it's heading that way. And I think some have done that well. I think as a CEO, especially if you're not also the chair, you have to work really closely with your chair or the independent director to try and shape the board composition over time, right? Marilyn Hewson did this at Lockheed Martin where, you know, they had a grid, you know, where are we going strategically? So what are the skills we need to have on the board? Let's assess our board members. Where are we? Right? Oh, we have no one who knows about Asia, or we have no one who's led a growth. How are we going to evolve the composition of the board over time? I mean, time is too precious to have a board that's not healthy, right? So how do we get there?
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Carolyn Dewar, a senior partner at McKinsey & Company and the founder of their CEO practice. I'm Coral Moore, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Next up, we'll dive deeper into the role of the CEO and what she's learned so far.
Top-notch insight from proven leaders. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with Carolyn Dewar, a senior partner at McKinsey & Company.
How do we get purpose? How important is the role of the CEO and of their organizations?
I think it's critical that the purpose moves from being a pretty statement on a poster on the wall to actually embedded in the day-to-day operating rhythm of the business. Right? That's what makes it authentic. That's what makes it true. I mean, Doug Baker, who is the CEO of Ecolab, they were an industrial cleaning company, right? You could imagine that as they got pushed on ESG and other parts of their agenda, they may not have been on the right side of that. And he and their leadership team really sat down and said, what is our purpose as a company? I think his quote was, I don't want to do, and he said, evil 9 to 5 and then write big checks and do volunteer work in the evenings. Yeah. How do we make the work that we do in line with that? And they said, okay, well, if we're an industrial cleaning company, our purpose is actually to make the world a cleaner place. And if we took that seriously and embedded it into our, they changed their KPIs around water usage, around the effluence of the products that they used and sold. They actually said, how do we make our work itself advance the agenda? So as we grow, our positive environmental impact also grows, as opposed to being something we're supposed to offset with big checks. Right? It was quite a different approach, and I think that's when it starts to get real.
Your data shows that top-performing CEOs deliver 2.8 times the return to shareholders of a company. If the performance of CEO is so critical to performance of a company, how should that inform the somewhat controversial topic of CEO compensation?
I do think it's a controversial topic, right? I think it's hard for us to get our heads around how this works. The data does show that having an excellent CEO matters and makes a real difference. But they are big, complicated jobs. And the markets and investors are becoming less and less tolerant of mistakes, right? And so with that compensation comes a real expectation for delivery. And I think that's why the CEO tenure is also getting shorter and shorter. People expect you to deliver.
We're speaking today with Carolyn Dewar, a senior partner at McKinsey & Company.
How do you, as a CEO, get more years? Like, what's the best strategy other than just pure performance?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think part of it is to start strong, right? It's not this misnomer of the first 100 days, right? You have more than 100 days. But I do think there's an expectation that you use that first year to truly shape the momentum for your tenure, right? So if you're not making some of the big calls in the first year, setting the tone for where you're going to take the company and mobilizing people towards that, it's harder and harder to pivot as you get later. So you've got to kind of come out of the gate strong with what that looks like. And then I think about folks who are already several years in, right? Satya Nadella had a tremendous run in his first 5 years in role, but then he did step back and say, what's going to be my next S-curve? And I think real excellent CEOs think about this as a series of S-curves or a series of sprints, right? You're going to go for a couple of years, drive a big agenda, make it happen, but you've already started thinking ahead of what's going to be that next wave. What does it look like? And I think that's a big part of the CEO's role is to get the organization humming and running on the current agenda so that you can be thinking ahead on how you're going to disrupt yourself, what comes next.
So part of the CEO is to say, step back and not just, the CEO runs the business to some degree, and the CEO does too, but to look longer term as part of their job. How do you do that? Like, do you go to conferences or what do you do? What advice do you have?
No, absolutely. I think the first piece of it is you have to get a great team who are running the day-to-day, as you said, right? Yes, you lean in early to get the agenda right, the priorities, and get things up and running. But then you should have confidence that you have the leaders you need and the team you need, that for the large part, they can be manning the ship, right? And then how do you think ahead? I think we heard different stories from CEOs, but they were all insatiable learners, right? Some people read a book a week. And we all say, how do you have time to do that when you're working 100 hours? But they find the time. Others like one-on-one conversations, and they're constantly bringing people in from outside to educate them and to sort of bring radical ideas. I think a number of them look outside their industry, right? And so, what is retail doing? What is tech doing? What are other sectors doing? And how do we port those learnings into what we're doing? I think one of the more interesting examples was someone who has a reverse mentor. So it's not just about a senior CEO coaching downwards, but they purposely have a group of younger, frankly, more tech savvy folks in the organization who they give permission and encouragement to coach them back. What am I missing? Where am I toned down? What is not working? And so there's all kinds of tips and tricks, but they all do create the time, including think time. So if you're scheduling more than 80% of your day, Monday to Friday, you're not allowing enough time for you to actually think and do some of this work. And the invariable firefights that come up as well.
We're speaking with Carolyn Dewar, a senior partner at McKinsey & Company and the founder of their CEO practice. I'm Carl Moore, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
In your book, you talk about six principles. Can CEOs perform well if they only excel at a few of them, or do you need all six cylinders to be firing, if you would?
I think as a company, all six need to be going, but you don't need to be the best of the best of the best on every single one, right? And this is the kind of decathlete example of, yes, you could be, the Michael Jordan in your sport or the Serena Williams, but true decathletes are world-class at a number of different things. And what they're magical at is doing all at once, doing them all well. And then frankly, highlighting the interdependencies across them. So do you need to be the number one strategist and the number one person driving this business? No, but you better understand how the strategy decisions are informing and being backed up by the budget process, which is being backed up by the innovation process. Your job is to see if all of those things are getting tight.
Your research uncovered how much hard work it takes to be a CEO. How do CEOs overcome this challenge and avoid being burnt out?
I think it does come back to this idea of managing a series of sprints, right? It's not just a marathon because you don't have the luxury of not performing till the end, right? But it also can't just be a sprint. And I think people were quite intentional about it, literally managing their daily, weekly, monthly, yearly calendar for what gives them energy and what depletes them, right? And this notion of work versus outside of work is a false dichotomy, right? Doing laundry depletes me. Many things at work energize me. So it's not that split, but knowing enough about what that is for you and managing your time so that you don't have so many brutal things in a row that you just don't have the mental bandwidth anymore. You need to have these moments. Ajay Banga shared that after his first 6 or 12 months in role, he feels like he didn't get off to a good start on this front. His calendar was a mess, was exhausted. He wasn't performing the way he should because he just couldn't even think. He was so tired. And he got very rigorous about sitting with his chief of staff and his EA, literally color coding his calendar against his priorities and things that mattered. And then sitting down at the end of each month and doing the, you know, the retroactive on the month. Did I spend the time on the things I said I should have? Did I follow the rules of thumb, right? Of having, in his case, 8 hours between whenever the dinner the night before ended and his first meeting was the next day, right? He had some rules of thumb. And I don't think there's any way around it other than needing that discipline.
What sources do CEOs draw upon for the courage to be bold? That's something they've got to do. What sources did you find?
I think it is an interesting one. And it is easy, especially as a new CEO, to feel like you need to sort of be delicate and not be too disruptive early on. But you can find those sources. So Satya Nadella at Microsoft, again, you think about him, he took over, essentially, he was the first non-founder CEO. I know Steve Ballmer wasn't technically the founder, but you had Ballmer and you had Gates. You were still on his board, literally sitting there looking over the shoulder. How did he get the courage to do a radical pivot to cloud, to do a radical pivot to growth mindset? I mean, these are big, bold changes. In his case, not only did he bring his own ideas in and his own, you know, amazing intellect, he went back into history. So he went back into the archives of the company and found the original purpose, the original goals of why Bill Gates had founded the company and what he was hoping to do. He actually brought that history up and he said, look, I'm not throwing away why we started. We started because we wanted to revolutionize technology and people's relationship with it. We've turned into a very narrow definition of what that is. What if we go back to that original purpose and really open ourselves and think wild, like broadly about what it could be? And so it was a fascinating kind of judo move, right? Of anchoring in the past, but challenging for the future. That was how he did it.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Carolyn Dewar, a senior partner at McKinsey & Company and the founder of their CEO practice. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Next up, we'll talk a bit about the future of work and how Carolyn envisions CEOs and how they work going forward.
Exclusive access to some of the most successful leaders out there. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with Carolyn Dewar, a senior partner at McKinsey & Company.
I work with a guy named Henry Mintzberg, and I've spent a bit of time with Michael Porter, and there's kind of two big views of strategy, kind of the deliberate, we bring in consultants, it's done by the CEO in their office. And the Mintzberg is more emergent, where strategy kind of bubbles up to some degree. Mm-hmm. What's the role of the board and of the CEO and the C-suite, et cetera, in developing strategy in your experience with the CEOs?
I think we've seen both options play out in terms of bottom up and top down. I think there's a couple of things that the CEO uniquely can do. I think they can set the frame and the level of ambition for what game we're playing. So, you know, Ajay Banga, when he took over at MasterCard, they were very much focused on keeping the credit card competitors, right? MasterCard versus Visa. He lifted his head up in the organization and said, actually, at the time, 11 years ago, credit card was still a tiny part of the market. So what we're actually trying to do is kill cash, right? We're a payments player. We're trying to transform transactions. And so he lifted the game of, here's what winning looks like. It's not over here in the corner. It's this bigger vision. They also uniquely can make really bold decisions and calls, right? So Ed Breen at DowDuPont, he's been a CEO for 23 plus years across multiple companies. He says there's 15 big decisions he's made in those 23 years that really counted. Those are decisions that only the CEO can make, right? Are we going to merge? Are we going to enter a new market? Are we going to exit a market? So knowing those calls and having the courage to make them. And then the last piece is meaningfully reallocating resources to the things that are important. So whether it's an emergent strategy or top down, the CEO can not just twiddle in the margins of, okay, you get your budget you got last year, plus or minus, but actually step back and say, we're going to pivot and put our money where our mouth is on some of these. You know, Mary Barra did this. They had been in India forever, had never made money. And they were presenting, you know, the bottoms up business plan for India, and it was still to not make money. And she said, wait, time out, right? I know we've always done this, but at what point do we not? And she made the brave decision to exit that market and use those dollars to reinvest in electric vehicles and a bunch of the new agenda items. Those are some of the calls that kind of a CEO can make.
When should a CEO bring in consultants to help him or her?
It's an interesting question. I think there's, you know, the most traditional answer is when you want an outside in view, right? There is value in having a sort of dispassionate look at where are we really? What are our threats and opportunities? What are some of the elephants in the room? And how do we make sure we bring sort of impartial data and facts to inform some of these big calls? You know, increasingly we're leading bigger change programs as well, though. So it's not just the strategy on a piece of paper, but what does it take to align and mobilize your organization to make it happen? Right? Big, complicated transformations that you're doing. It's hard to do on your own.
We're speaking with Carolyn Dewar, a senior partner at McKinsey & Company and the founder of their CEO practice. I'm Carl Moore, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
My students, my undergrad students, would be delighted that companies are doing stakeholder review, thinking about ESG, thinking about EDI and so on. They are occasionally cynical as young people, which is sad when you're that young, but you actually see that this is a genuine trend in business, that they're thinking beyond just the shareholders.
I think so. I think it's a journey that everyone's going on, right? If you think back to the business roundtable and when people signed off on, yes, the multi-stakeholder review, I think that the last few years have really started to make that very real, right? We think about the pandemic and some of the other issues going on where even, you know, the current crisis with Ukraine, business leaders are realizing that, and we're all realizing, the decisions they make have ripple effects, right? On the communities they operate on, in their supply chain, their employees, not just their employees' livelihoods, but actually their health, their life. I mean, the boundary conditions for the impact has really expanded over time. And I think the time is up thinking that your only job is to solve for shareholders, right? Now we're all just trying to figure out, so then what does that look like, right? What is the role of the board? Do they still represent shareholders, their broader view? And how do you make trade-off decisions between shorter and longer term? I think that's what we're all figuring out now.
Talk about in the leadership literature is authenticity and being an authentic leader. How important is that with the CEOs you've interviewed? Is that a big deal these days?
I think it's a big deal. I really do. I mean, frankly, the job is too big and too hard and too visible to not fully be authentic, right? You need to be the same leader internally and externally and with all your stakeholders. I do think it's worth reflecting on, what does your organization need of its CEO, given where you're going? And some of those will be authentic strengths of yours, because that's why you're picked, right? Maybe you're a visionary. Maybe you're great at making decisive calls. But some of those elements might be a stretch for you, right? Maybe your organization's going into a time of severe cost cutting or needs to make radical change that isn't in your typical wheelhouse. So I think authentic leadership doesn't mean that you don't have to also be willing to learn and change and grow as a leader, right? And you need to kind of hold both of those things at once.
COVID-19, how did that change the role of the CEO? You did a number of the interviews in the midst of the crisis. How did they pivot? What are they doing differently since COVID-19?
Absolutely. We asked the question explicitly. And as you say, we were in the midst of it. Four things jumped out in terms of shifts in the CEO role. One is this notion of thinking 10 times bolder, right? Companies had to pivot dramatically during the pandemic out of necessity, right? But you saw five-year digitization plans happen in 3 months, right? You saw consumer sentiment and behavior shift almost overnight. And I think the question CEOs are asking now, we don't always want to be in a state of crisis. What enabled us to move so quickly in those moments? And how do we want to use those operating rhythms for other issues? So, you know, they jumped levels, right? They didn't wait for the recommendation to bubble up through 7 layers of presentation and decision. They would just pick up the phone and call the front line and say, what do you need? And leadership teams were meeting daily in very quick stand-ups and making quick calls. They were listening to stakeholder views and making. So part of it is how do we operate bolder and faster on issues now that we want to do as opposed to we have to do? That was the first one. The second one, I think we already touched on, which is this multi-stakeholder view and really a genuine recognition that it is their job as CEO now to contemplate all of those things. And that's the expectation of their employees, the expectation of their customers and externally. So that's the second one. The third one is interesting. And Michael Fisher at Cincinnati Children's Hospital coined this phrase with us of your to-be list is as important as your to-do list. So during the pandemic, I think CEOs and leaders broadly were called upon by their organization to play, I mean, in some cases, almost a pastoral role, or at minimum, a role of really engaging with people. And it wasn't just what decisions you made and what you did, but the tone you were setting, how human you were being. Were you recognizing the challenges that people were having as part of their life? He took it quite literally. And, you know, in his daily schedule where it shows his calendar for the day, writes in the corner, what are the leadership characteristics that I'm going to need to show today, given the meetings I have? It's not meant to be inauthentic, but if you're going from a town hall with 1,000 people to a tough regulator meeting, who do you need to be in those moments? That was the third one. And then the last piece was just the level of connectivity across CEOs. You know, I think things like the Business Roundtable and other bodies could always be there. But the pandemic was something no one had ever done. And I think they reached out to one another in a deeper way and engaged with one another in how we're going to get through this. What are you thinking about? What are you doing? And I hope that's a muscle we don't lose.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Carolyn Dewar, a senior partner at McKinsey & Company and the founder of their CEO practice. I'm Carl Moore, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Next up, we'll talk about whether Carolyn is an introvert or an extrovert, and how she perceives some of the recent trends in the job market, and it really is changing out there.
They made it, and they're telling you how. You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with Carolyn Dewar, a senior partner at McKinsey & Company.
Carolyn, are you more of an introvert or more of an extrovert?
It's a good question, and you can probably tell me the nuance here. I think I would come across as an extrovert because I like to talk a lot and I externalize my problem solving, but I also get exhausted. Sometimes I need time by myself to energize, so I don't know where that places me on the spectrum.
Probably a bit of an ambivert. At McKinsey, is this something you sometimes discuss on a team that if people are more introvert experts? You kind of sort of, oh, she's an introvert, I'll give her some time by herself as she needs it?
It is. It's something we talk explicitly about. We use the Myers-Briggs, and I know there's different beliefs on that as a tool. But so at the beginning of every team, as you imagine, we're working with new people every 6-8 weeks. We have to quickly understand each other. We use that as a shorthand, and introvert extrovert is one of the four dimensions. Just as a shorthand of, yeah, how do we make sure it's not just the loudest, fastest voice in the room that trumps? Often it's the person who's the most thoughtful, maybe takes a little more time.
How about the CEOs? Were they a mix of introverts? Like, traditionally, we thought all CEOs are extroverts. It was an old school view.
Yeah.
But you must have found a lot of them were actually more introverted when you got down to it.
There was a real mix. You're right. There's sort of the common wisdom that you have to be this charismatic, extroverted leader. I think there's a real mix, right? And I think the leadership style can be different as well, right? Not everyone has to be the rah-rah kind of town hall person. And some CEOs carve out more time in their calendar for thinking time. Others actually want time with their direct reports team, unstructured, because that's how they sort out their thoughts. It's much about being self-aware, I think, and matching your operating model, the model that'll work for you.
Which women and people of color stood out for you as top performing CEOs?
I mean, we made sure that we had, as representation. I will be honest, because we had the 10-year piece, it had to be involved for 6 years. That was even more, it made it more challenging because we're still all on a journey. But there was a number of truly remarkable, right? We had Mary Barra and Marilyn Hewson. We had Roger Ferguson at TIAA. And, you know, when we spoke to them, I think a number of them were reticent to talk specifically about what it meant to be an underrepresented group in that role. I think, frankly, they all fought so hard to get there. They just wanted to be known as a leader. But I think you can't help but see the resilience that was in all of their leadership profiles. And what, you know, fact-free, but if I had to guess, I bet they all had to outperform to get where they were, right? But we're excited to see more and more coming.
The Great Resignation is one of the latest, biggest challenging facing CEOs. How do CEOs create meaningful cultures that will retain and indeed inspire employees in their better moments?
I mean, I think you named it in terms of the answer, right? The Great Resignation, yes, it's about office and out of office and all those things. But it turns out people will actually work incredibly hard and in lots of situations if they truly believe in what they're doing. And so how do you connect people's personal sense of meaning to the work that you're doing every day? You know, a simple tool we've often used with CEOs and they've used is the five sources of meaning, right? Can you talk about your company and why someone would be excited to be involved because of what it means for them personally and individually, what it means to be part of the team, what it means for the customer, and if we do this well, what that looks like, what it means for our company, and then what it means for stakeholders, broadly in society broadly. If you tell all five of those stories, again, in an authentic way, this isn't about being disingenuous, you're going to hit on the primary kind of motivator for most of your audience. Everyone has kind of a primary. And what's interesting is you tend to talk about the one that matters to you, which is really probably only one out of the five. And so be mindful of, are you over-indexing on the messages that resonate with you versus really hitting on all these five areas that people are contemplating when they decide where to work?
We're speaking with Carolyn Dewar, a senior partner at McKinsey & Company and the founder of their CEO practice. I'm Carl Moore, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
What do you mean when you say top CEOs treat the soft stuff as the hard stuff? What does that mean?
I mean, we were struck by how seriously these CEOs took organizational effectiveness, right? Culture, talent, behaviors, mindsets, all of these things that sometimes gets labeled the soft stuff or the work of HR. And they very quickly said, that is not HR stuff. That's my job. That's our job as business leaders. You know, none of this works if we don't have the organization working well together. And they spent real time. They also didn't buy into this idea that it was soft and therefore couldn't be measured and managed rigorously, right? You think about, you know, Greg Case at Aon, and he talks about one Aon and really coming together as a single organization. He had very clear markers of what that would look like, which he measured, very clear expectations for his leaders for how he needed them to show up. And if they weren't showing up in that way, there was meaningful consequence. So are you putting as much teeth on kind of quote the soft stuff as you are the rigor you would manage an operational priority?
I presume during the COVID-19 crisis, you didn't travel as much as you used to back in the day. What do you miss about travel and what do you not miss?
That's a good question, especially as I'm getting on a plane tomorrow for the first time in a long time. I do miss the airplane time because that's the time, especially now in a world of 14-hour back-to-back Zooms, where you don't have a Zoom, you don't have a conference call, you can actually read and think. Maybe that says something about me on the introvert scale. I miss that. And I think some of the earliest things I went back in person for were the one-on-ones, the dinners, the lunches, the relationship building. There's something about being in person that's special. You know, the idea of going into the office or traveling to an office to sit by yourself in your room, that doesn't make any sense to me.
What book are you reading right now?
Well, I have two little kids, and so one of them is in kindergarten, and so we are doing a lot of learn-to-reading reading books. What am I actually reading for my own pleasure? Gosh, this is like a tired working mom talking. I wish I got a chance to read more.
Well, let me ask you the question I ask writers. What book are you writing right now? You just finished one. Maybe it's unfair to put you under that pressure. But what's the next book idea you're starting to think about?
I think there's two in my head, and it'll be interesting to see if there would be appetite. But what I'm writing in my own mind, one I do think is the diversity point, right? What does it mean as we think about truly pushing the boundaries of what leadership looks like? How much are we stuck in the past of our archetype of what a leader looks like, acts like, does, versus how would the world be different if we had a broader range of leadership styles and types and backgrounds? That's one. I think the other one is, maybe it's because we were talking to a lot of seasoned CEOs nearing retirement, but I have a lot of clients who are 55, about to retire, don't necessarily need to earn the money. This is a privileged conversation, but still have a lot to give, right? And they don't necessarily want a corporate job. I think there is room in the world for a guidance counselor, for mid to late tenure people who are figuring out what 55 to 75 is going to look like. And how do we as society really think about tapping into that incredible wisdom of that group?
I like the second book because I'm in that age group. So I look for, I hope you write that. I encourage you to do that, Carolyn.
Let's do it.
How, you're living in California. You've been there for a number of years. You and your husband are both Canadians. When do you occasionally feel Canadian?
I feel Canadian a lot. And maybe that's on me. I've been here about 10 years and my colleagues still tease me that I introduce myself as Canadian half the time. I think those roots go deep, especially the last couple of years and what's been going on in the world and in various countries. I just think there's a set of core values that never leave. And I am still proudly Canadian.
This is the CEO Series. We'd like to thank Carolyn for joining us today. We'd also like to thank our technical producer, Marco Campagna, and our show producer, Youssef Sahoni. Thank you for tuning into the CEO Series. À la prochaine.